We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined as always by Darius and Mike, and we're recording amidst a crazy NBA morning of news. News that Kawhi is out with an ACL injury for at least tonight's game and perhaps longer. News of Chris Paul entering health and safety protocols, Scott Brooks being let go, Jeff Van Gundy being let go.
But Stan Van Gundy.
Thank you. Stan Van Gundy being let go. But as basketball lovers, we would be remiss to not give Kevin Durant his flowers for an all-time great playoff performance last night. In the last pod, Darius, we were talking about the value of shot making. I was really making the case for that. And I was rewatching Kevin Durant's shots from the game, in his game five against the Bucks. And let me read off to you the moves that he pulls off on just his first five shots, right? So first one, he's on the right wing up against Chris Middleton. He does a front-to-back crossover right as Middleton reaches in and then hits a pull-up jumper going left. Next play, he's getting ball pressure by PJ Tucker. He rips through high, and it's a two dribble pull up into an and one going right. Then the next shot is a hard plant with his right foot. As he dribbles the ball behind his back, he gets – who was the defender on that? I think it was Joe Harris on that. Harris is completely rocked back on his heels as he pulls it back, hits a three right in his eye. Then the next play, a jump stop out of a sideline out of bounds play. D. Inbound pass catches it and jump stops in all in one motion. Hits a turnaround jumper over his right shoulder. The next play, he gets a post up on the right block and hits a turnaround jumper over his left shoulder. These are the execution of these high level moves by Kevin Durant. When we talk about the value of shot making, there is probably no better shot maker in the league than a prime Kevin Durant. And the moves he was pulling off last night, before we get into, he had a complete dominance, right? That wasn't the only way that he dominated that game. But just talk to me, D, about the just unbelievable shot making in his game last night.
I mean, he's Kevin Durant, right? Like, there was so much noise, right, about, and this is talking head stuff, and so, like, I hate to go down that road too much, because every day I feel like there's the content stuff needs, like, the content gods, they need to be fulfilled, right? And so everyone's offering sacrifices to the content gods every day to sure. please them, right? And so every day there's takes, and there's takes, and there's takes, and there's takes. But one of the takes that irritated me the most...
There's so much beautiful... Yeah, sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
But one of the takes that irritated me the most was the idea that, like, Kevin Durant needed to prove something to people, as if he's not actually Kevin Durant, right? And so...
We have the object permanence of fruit flies, man. Like, he... goes in off season or two or a couple seasons without doing it, and everybody forgets who he is.
Well, no, it's more to me. It's more the fact that like the path that he's taken in his career for too many people has obscured how good he actually is. Right.
That's true.
And it's like there's a putting of value on things that don't actually matter if you're a fan of actually watching basketball. If you're a fan of the story, then the story of him making a super team in Golden State and leaving the Thunder, or the story of him joining Kyrie and then getting Harden to join the Nets, those stories sort of supplant the idea of how good he is as a basketball player. And so he is the most, honestly, and this is someone who adores Kobe Bryant, who grew up watching Michael Jordan play, he is probably the most technically proficient scorer that the league has ever seen, just because his jump shot is so pure. And he's so big, and his handle is so good that there is really nothing he can't do as an offensive player on the basketball court. And Mike, we were having a conversation the other day offline, like off of the pod, and we were sort of talking about the prospects of what this series was going to look like moving forward. And this was just on the heels of Kyrie spraining his ankle, and the Bucks had really started to look like they were figuring some things out with the Nets in game four, and now it's 2-2. And yes, Brooklyn's going back home, but Harden wasn't supposed to play in game five at this point. Kyrie's got a sprained ankle where it's just like, oh my goodness, stop showing us the damn replay, right? It looks so horrific. And the idea was, what are the Nets going to do? Like, Kevin Durant is going to need to go bonkers. And you basically sort of push back and be like, yeah, guess what? Kevin Durant can go bonkers. Like, I could see him scoring 50 points and, like, leading the Nets to a victory. And so, not to call you Nostrum Mike, or I don't got a good way to frame it here. And obviously, Kevin Durant being good, like, not breaking news, right? But the idea that he was capable of this, you were sort of talking to us about, like, hey, man, that's Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. And so, like, talk to us some about, like, what you were thinking even heading into this game about what was possible, and then to see it sort of come to fruition the way that it did.
Yeah, I was slightly annoyed that he missed that free throw in the final minute to not get 50. But he also played 48 minutes, which is a separate discussion that I did not like. And that obviously helped his point total grow. But the rest of the numbers that were there, and you guys mentioned it off the top, just the rebounding, the passing was brilliant. He had an Anthony Davis stocks day. So I just think that Kevin Durant, before the Achilles, I don't think there was anybody questioning that he was right there with LeBron. And I've had LeBron number one, and that didn't even change after KD got finals MVP over the Cavs. I still thought that LeBron overall brought more to the table by a bit. But Kevin Durant was two. He's been two. Like, he's been that guy. And the thing that had a chance to change that was the Achilles injury. And that, I think, so Pete, I don't think it's that people forgot how good he was. I think that we haven't seen somebody return to absolute peak best player in the league form after that kind of an injury. And we just want to see it. And in the regular season, we saw him play 35 games. That's it. And so, and yet, I watched Kevin Durant play in the preseason, two games in December. And that was enough for me to pick the Nets to win the East, just because he looked like Kevin Durant. The caveat was, okay, can he stay healthy? And then he didn't fully. He had the hamstring strain, and that's always a concern. And it's still a concern for me that he can go, like, he can't play 48 minutes of even the great Kobe Bryant couldn't play 48 minutes game after game after game after game after game. That was the point where he tore his Achilles. And so I'm not saying that he shouldn't be playing 42 or 44, but I don't know. That's the part that concerns me moving forward. But as to what his skill level is, and as to how he's moving with his body and how fluid he looks and the skills and all of that stuff is there. And he is the best player in the playoffs now by a lot, I think. And of course, LeBron is watching at home, and gladiator memes ensue, and LeBron will be back next year. But for now, Kevin Durant's the best player. And I just hope that they can manage his load and his minutes properly moving forward here, so that you started the pod, it's like we're just dropping like flies right now with injuries.
It's so sad.
That's the thing that I'm just really knocking on wood that doesn't keep happening.
Yeah, it's been such a brutal season. I hope that regardless who your fan allegiances are, that we can all agree that we want the best players to play in the highest stakes games, right? And this playoffs is, I mean, we're not even out of the second round. And, you know, more stars have missed a game and been hurt than have actually played in these playoffs. So with respect to Durant coming back, you're right. I'm incorrect in saying people forgot how good Kevin Durant was. It's just the narrative is just so in the moment, like, you know, whatever's happening right now is so at the forefront that things that happened not that long ago can, I think, be easily skimmed over.
No question.
What makes Durant sustainable is a combination of his physical tools and his technical proficiency. One guy I always think of in terms of technical proficiency is like CJ McCollum, right? Who's a smaller player who doesn't have a ton of athleticism, but he really knows how to hard plant, front to back cross, you know, all of the technical stuff that I would love in the next 5 years there to be more of an emphasis on the moves that these guys are making. And that's why I really wanted to talk KD on this level in particular, because Darius, he's executing a high level, 8th degree black belt kung fu master type of moves while being 7 feet tall. And the thing that I don't want to say that he's taken a massive leap in this respect, but his ball handling, like you pointed out, helps him get into these moves and create space. Like when you've got that type of wingspan and that release point and you're creating space, I don't know how Budenholzer didn't double him. Like, you got to get the ball out of his hands. But anyway.
Very Sam Mitchell in the 81-point game.
Bro, like,
effort
makes somebody else there. Beat you.
Well, especially with those other guys who are on the court.
Right,
A lot of, like, there was a lot of, why is Giannis not guarding him? And I thought that was besides the point. In part because Giannis moving his feet laterally isn't quite as good on the perimeter as I think some people think. And Durant's just going to cross him over a couple times and rise up and shoot a jumper to the side anyway. So you may as well have Giannis off the ball. Plus PJ Tucker, that's what you want. You want physicality in his body. So I didn't think that was the move. I thought Pete's point, like, yo, get the ball out of his hands.
You have to be able to trap on the perimeter in this game. It's funny. We talk about the modern game a lot, but a lot of the times when we talk about the modern game with respect to shooting, we don't realize that's 5 years ago. That's about half an NBA generation ago. And it's always cool. I've seen this throughout my entire life in the NBA, is that offense will make an innovation and then defense is the trailing indicator in order to guard that. And you're seeing more and more teams like the Clippers with Utah and Mitchell trapping on the perimeter, and the double teams of the olden days where you used to double team an Olajuwon or Kareem or David Robinson down low on the block have moved out onto the perimeter.
Well, also too, it's just like those old school double teams, man, of like, yeah, let's double one pass away. Like those,
right.
Like those are gone. Right. And then the evolution and then the legalization and then implementation of zone principles, right? Because of the defensive 3 second rule versus the old illegal defense rule, and the proliferation of like strong side zone principles in order to sort of decline driving angles and lanes and make guys shoot, right? That was the thing.
There's a level of sophistication that's
like, yeah. And that progression of, oh, well, we're going to make you shoot. Oh, you're going to make me shoot? Well, then guess what? I'm just going to shoot, and I'm going to make
these. And I'm going to get really good at shooting. And all of a sudden,
I'm going to get really good at shooting. Mm-hmm. Right? And so now we have more shooting. And so now you have to guard those other places on the court. And guess what? Those strong side zone principles are not as good anymore, because it's literally, you show me a second defender, and I see where my open guy is on top of the key, opposite wing, opposite corner. It's just like,
I'm going to set a pin screen for him. yeah, I'm going to set a pin screen for him to get him even more open. And now you've got a really good shooter who that's his thing. That's why he's in the NBA shooting that weak side three.
And so now, then, guess what? So now we solved your strong side zone. And now we're going to drive that's more right. again, right? Mm-hmm. And now it's just like... We've got all these tricks now to draw even more fouls and 3-point fouls. And now we're getting to mm-hmm. the lane more. And the analytics of that has always been true. But the ability to actually functionally build offense to get you to that point has been progressing. And we're there now.
And players are now training toward the analytics, if that makes sense. Like they are like, oh, this, if I'm a 3-point shooter, that one dribble pull up or that drive across the lane that wing guys will make when they attack a closeout. There are players that are practicing an increasingly shrinking number of scenarios because these are the only types of shots that they're getting in this very analytically informed league.
Well, Pete, we as longtime Lakers fans, I used to love the idea is that it's like when Phil Jackson was the coach of the team, guess what, man? He had power forward shooting that top of the key jumper. He had got mm-hmm. like he had because the triangle was so dictative of the spots on the floor in which guys were typically going to get their shots from, it allowed guys to train more and practice more towards the areas of the court in which they were going to be expected to be productive from. And it wasn't, mm-hmm. it was only a handful of guys, the Michael Jordans, the Kobe Bryants, the Scottie Pippins, who where the expectation was, all right, well, yeah, you better learn pinch post, you better learn elbow area, you better, like all of these spots on the floor were going to be areas where you needed to be proficient. And so that's why those guys were all court masters in a certain sense. We're on a tangent now, back to Durant. Durant is, he is so tech, you used the word technically proficient. And like you mentioned a guy like CJ McCollum, but in, and I don't want to like make this comp to Kobe Bryant, but KD's explosiveness as a scorer and the types of baskets that he gets remind me of Kobe, even if aesthetically they're not really the same type of guy. It is an ability, Mike, to score from outside the arc. Like KD is a mid-range killer. He is a mid-range killer, and he will get you to spots of 15, 18 feet to shoot the pull-up J. And he is not known as a passer, right? But 10 assists this last game because he was drawing so much attention and making the right reads. And so I think I saw a stat last night that it was the first like some sort of 45 plus point game while playing for 48 minutes since guess who? Kobe Bryant in 2001. And so it was just a callback to me of the type of explosive scorer that Durant is. It sort of surprised me that he'd never scored more than 50 in a playoff game, but it was just sort of like, it was a callback to me of some of those Kobe games where it's just like, get on my back. I've got the whole package and I'm going to do it tonight.
Yeah. And there's also, there's just a difference in the way that he is going to get to his 50 and Giannis is. And I think that this series has showed just the difference in these players overall in the playoff context. And the series isn't over. Milwaukee has a good chance to win game 6 at home. I do think a lot of this depends on, okay, so Harden, for all the minutes that he played, he's going to hit some shots moving forward. Is he going to move a little bit better? Is the hamstring, is it tight? Is it that he doesn't trust it? I don't know. Is Kyrie going to come back? You'd be surprised if he came back, certainly in game 6, maybe game 7. So all of that still within the series itself is on the line. But this is why Kevin Durant was in that LeBron conversation. And I don't think Giannis has been. Despite what some might say about the regular season, because when you have to win in the postseason, there are certain basketball skills that you have to have. And there's only so many players that can do them. And it's not just on offense, it's on defense. And that was the game where Durant again showed us. Because Pete, you're not wrong. Some people did forget. Some people did forget, and he reminded. And that was great to see, just as a basketball fan. And it just puts the Western Conference into context as well. And now the Clippers are going to have Kawhi. And Utah still doesn't have Conley, at least for the game that we're going to watch tonight. But other than that, like Chris Paul, he now might be out. So all of these teams,
unbelievable.
Each team in the West is without a key player. You'd say Utah may suddenly feel like they're in the driver's seat because they at least have the biggest part of their core, minus the guy that they have played without some. But it's a this stuff has been changing every day, and we're going to have to keep monitoring. But again, just Kevin Durant is here, and let's just hope that they can control his minutes and his load to the point where he can sustain this.
Yeah, that was just an all-time great performance. And with so much going on around the league, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I do want to get back to the Nets and KD and all of that, but that will happen over the course of a few pods, I think. We're going to turn our attention to the Kawhi news, the Chris Paul news, and just how that has a massive impact on the league, which is something that seems to happen every day now.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
As Laker fans, we experienced this a few times this season. The last and fatal blow was with AD's injury, where you go from playing a certain way and from being built around something in particular to immediately having to change core tenets of what you do. And Darius, we're recording this before the game tonight with the Clippers in Utah in Game 5. Kawhi Leonard is going to be out at least for now. I'm 40 years old. The Clippers my entire life have had the worst luck. I'm not even like talking trash, right? And certainly a lot of it can be self-inflicted, right? But like, how do you lose a playoff game when Corey Brewer and Josh Smith go off from three? You know what I mean? Like they've had some weird shit over the years that's happened. And their last two games of the regular season to preserve their health, quote unquote, aside, I thought they did a lot of things right this year. Like, I know I'm supposed to hate the Clippers, but I don't have those feelings as a Laker fan. I thought that they'd done a lot right this year, D, and to have something like this happen is just a killer blow. Is there anything that can be done off of that?
I mean, look, Paul George, here you go, my guy. Like, look, Paul George has been playing really well, right? And but Kawhi has been even better than Paul George. And you were talking about the Clippers. Like, I don't hate the Clippers. I like to enjoy some of their foibles.
Last year was hilarious. How last year went, I absolutely loved laughing at them last year. But like this year, I felt like they've honored the game in ways that maybe they didn't last year.
Well, I think that if you go back through the archives of our pod this season, I think that we've been pretty complimentary of what their prospects were as a team this year. I think we had them as a top three team in the West the entire year, despite what the records might say. I think we've consistently said that they were probably the biggest threat to the Lakers as a championship hopeful from the Western Conference. And it does start with Kawhi. And then it goes to Paul George, and then it goes to all of that versatility that they have on the wing, all those like-sized players, and losing Kawhi is brutal for them. Like, he is, we talked a lot in one of the last pods about the success of Phoenix being predicated on having Booker and Paul on sort of opposite sides of the court. And I think the Suns do a really good job of utilizing the individual strengths of both of those guys to amplify each other, right? But Paul George and Kawhi aren't necessarily like that, but they do operate on different sides of the court, and they can space you in ways that allow each guy to work in the ways that work best for them. They're just not always amplifying each other, right? And so Kawhi's ability to sort of operate from that mid-post area and then extend back out to three and just shoot the ball. And then now, Mike, he has incorporated a lot of that attacking of the rim that we did not see a lot of during the regular season, that I think was one of the reasons why if there was a ceiling that we saw for them, it was based off the fact like, hey, man, this team doesn't get to the rim. They don't get to the foul line. And if you're going to win in the postseason, it can't just be, well, we're going to be mid-range killers the entire time and shoot a bunch of threes. Like, you have to threaten the basket. And Kawhi has been doing so much more of that this postseason. And to his credit, so has Paul George. And to lose Kawhi now at this point for who knows how long, right? He's out for at least this game, but indefinite is sort of just like, well, damn, like, is it the playoffs? Is it two games? We really don't know. And I think the Clippers have to plan as if he's not going to be there for a while. So what are you thinking about this? Like, are you burying them without Kawhi? Do you think Paul George and like some of the other role players can step up and keep them hanging around in this series? I know that your thoughts on Utah may influence this as well.
I don't know for sure that, and I don't know if anybody could, that the Clippers were going to win that series, even if Kawhi Leonard stayed healthy. And, you know, it's going back to Utah, despite looking like the Clippers finally figured out how to play against them, which was to play small for the most part, which was to go away from Gobert, which was to shorten the rotation and actually play Terrence Mann. And so they had made some of the adjustments that I felt like had them. They were the better team. And they had taken some control, but that didn't mean they were going to go into Utah and win game five in a tough place to play. And then, or that they were going to for sure close it out if they did in game six, or if they were going to go. So I still think that it was relatively a toss up. And that's with Mike Conley pending. Now we know Conley's not going to play in game five. So that was before the Kawhi news. And I do kind of feel like it's a blow that I think makes Utah the very clear favorite to win this series. I don't think it's 100%. The Clippers are still good without Kawhi, but they just, it's the combination of the loss of him in the rotation and all that he does as kind of that lead attack player. But it's also just the mental side of it that comes into the team that the Lakers felt after AD went out the second time, where they are now, and also because of their history and their playoff history, it's just so difficult to then rally around that and think, yeah, we can win this series and we can win the next series. I suppose that what they're going to try to do is say, hey, look, Chris Paul, you know, might be out for Phoenix. Conley's still out. Like, there are a lot of things around the league they can point to. Kyrie is out. Like, Ty Lue can have that speech. Hey, there isn't a team out there that's dominant right now. You guys can still do this. So they're going to try to instill that belief, but I just don't think it's enough for all of what Kawhi represents. Pete, I don't know if you want to hit that as well, but I think this is kind of a death blow, unfortunately, and a devastating one for them, considering where they're at right now and what the history is.
Yeah, I think it is too, because I think that even if you can conjure that will and belief that you were talking about, you have to learn how to play a different way. You have to fundamentally play differently when one of your stars go down. And we saw this a few times with the Lakers season with all of the injuries. There were several different versions of this team, right? There was the version where AD went down, but the rest of the team was relatively healthy. And then, AD and then Dennis went down right after that. And then there's the version where Dennis comes back, but still no AD. And then there's the version where LeBron goes down and we have neither guy. Then there's the version where AD comes back, but no LeBron, right? So there's all these permutations. And what happened almost every single time that that happened? We played poorly and lost the first few games of that. And then as that group played together longer, they built some more of that cohesion and consistency that I'm always talking about. And they got better. But it takes time. You have to be able to play together. And the version of this Clippers team that's built around Paul George that can maybe scrap out a game here or there at this level of basketball, Darius, I would argue they would need time to be able to build that. They'd need a month of playing that way, and they just don't have that luxury.
So I agree. My only pushback against that idea with this specific team and this specific player is that Kawhi played 50 games this year or something like that, right? Or 55 games. Like, he is a player who has missed games, who does sit out, who they do have game plans built out and an idea of what the team should look like without this player available, because it's sort of built into the calculus of what having this specific player on your team looks like. And so that would be my only pushback against that point. But the counter to that is you've lost right. him to injury this time. And there is the psychological blow that Mike pointed to, not to mention that, or on top of that, it's the Jazz and they're a good basketball team. And this is the playoffs and it's the second round. And
right.
it's doing all that on the fly,
thing we did 2 months ago. Right. They may have done it a while ago, but it's been a while since they played without Kawhi, and they certainly weren't playing at this level of stakes and caliber of ball.
Well, also, too, the game plans are so developed at this point, right? This isn't a random Thursday in February and, Kawhi is taking a night off against the Pelicans. We're going to do this, right? It's like you have been building towards a game plan and something that works for a very specific team. And that specific team has been doing the same to battle against you. And the formula that they found, Mike, was so predicated on the unique strengths of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. He was the guy who was switching on to Gobert a lot. He was the one who was on the backside sort of making rotation decisions on paint versus wing and navigating that like a free safety, right? And he's their best rebounder. Right. And so how many contested rebounds do you see Kawhi sort of going in there for and swooping up to clean up defensive possessions? There's a lot of stuff that he specifically does that is the engine for what this team wants to do. And losing that type of guy is equivalent to losing a LeBron or an Anthony Davis. He is Kawhi Leonard. And so that's why I'm with you, Pete, on the point that you made, but just wanted to hint at the counter to that, which is like, hey, like they do have contingencies built for missing this specific player, but it's not the same when it comes to this time of the year.
I think we can contrast it directly to Utah and then the Lakers. And in this kind of a series, and the Suns probably as well fit more into the Utah part of it, what they do on offense and defense for Utah is pretty scripted. You know what they're going to do, but they do it well and they can keep executing. Even if you're going to switch, sometimes Utah will still run their offense. And if you pull out a cog like Mike Conley, Joe Ingles steps in. It looks a little different. Mitchell does some more of what Conley does, right? It is not as clean, but they can still do it. And they can still defend in the same way. If you take LeBron or AD out of the Lakers offense, if you take Kawhi or Paul George out of the Clippers offense, it just can't by nature look the same, because Kawhi, all four of those players are going to take 20 shots a game. And they're going to take shots in places that are difficult to make them unless you're a star. And now, so look at their last game. Paul George takes 20 shots. Kawhi takes 19. Nobody else takes more than 11. Not for the Clippers, and that was Marcus Morris. So now Morris has to take more shots. Reggie Jackson has to take more shots. Coming in off the bench, right, it's going to be like Kennard or Terrence Mann. So these guys are going to have to somehow fill that load. They're not going to be able to do it as efficiently. And that's not even talking about the defense, which where Kawhi has been, you know, pretty impactful. So it's just a hard, it's just a hard thing to solve for them. And I, that's why, again, I think the three of us and everybody, everybody's going to write them off. And can they rally around that and find a way? Sure. Utah's no juggernaut. You don't need me to say that. I've been speaking all year about Utah. They're no juggernaut, but, and then Pete, maybe we should transition here to Chris Paul, because depending on how long he's out, and we don't know, I don't know if this is the 10 to 14 day thing for health and safety. We don't know. There are various reports that are out right now, but the bottom line is, even if this series between the Clippers and the Jazz goes seven, he's going to miss at least the first several games of this, of the conference finals. And we saw Phoenix against the Lakers even play a couple games where Chris Paul played like 15 to 20 minutes and campaign could stepped up. And they actually have some pretty good backup guards behind that. Like Javon Carter, I kind of like, you know,
for sure.
He was wearing the thing about Javon Carter, as a quick aside, he wears one pink Kobe and one Grinch. And I don't know how that like became his thing. I haven't seen any other player do it. I can't lie. I do think it's kind of dope. I do kind of like it.
You got to find a way to ask him about that next year when you have increased access.
So, anyway, I'm just saying, like, I'm also not going to dismiss Phoenix having a chance to stay, because with Utah, not 100%, but Utah becomes, to me, I guess this is the bottom line, becomes the favorite now. Thinking that they now have time, if they can get past the Clippers, to get Conley back potentially before the Suns could get Chris Paul. And Chris Paul, where the way that he's playing right now, would be the best player in that series with, you know, Devin Booker. That's a whole kind of another argument. I don't know.
So a little pushback to that. So yeah. Chris Paul is rightfully lauded for bringing a level of competitiveness and organization and bringing a certain culture to the team. There's also a certain degree of, having played them in a seven game series and lost, there's a certain degree of where I think that that's gone too far in that direction, where it's like Devin Booker hits some wonderful shot and drops 18 and a quarter. And it's like, look at how wonderful Chris Paul is for teaching this to Devin Booker. And it's like, I'm watching Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton kick our asses. And like, I appreciate CP3's contribution to the overall part of it. But Darius, I don't think that Phoenix potentially losing CP3 is the same as Kawhi. It's huge. Don't get me wrong. But I think that there is more to fall back on than, say, the Clippers have.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. That said,
they're both all NBA second teams, right?
They are. Are you telling me, though, that 6'2", 6'1", Chris Paul is the same as a Kawhi, though?
Well, but Pete, so physically, and Darius, I'll kick this right back to you. I'm like, you heard the hesitation in my voice in clearly picking Paul over Booker. I've kind of gone back and forth all year,
sure,
right?
For sure.
But Chris Paul, we cannot just line him up with Kawhi and say, okay, one guy's hands are this big, one guy's this tall. Chris Paul's mentality does make a much bigger difference than Kawhi's, or lack thereof, and he has to be on the floor to do that. And Kawhi is not a leader in playoff series in the way that Chris Paul is. That's why he's getting those points for when Booker plays well and for when Aiden plays well, because it's real. I'm not saying he's a better player, but including the leadership aspect that he brings, that's where the value becomes closer.
All of that being true, is there no one that illustrates your point of small guards, no matter how good they are, have a limited ceiling in come playoff time? Or am I misunderstanding the point that you make when you say that?
No, I think that Chris is, along with, I mentioned John Stockton the other day, and to an extent, Steve Nash, they are skilled enough, and Darius was making this point, to overcome some of the small guard thing. And smart enough, skilled enough. Now, you ultimately still, at the end of the day, in a series, of course, that's the different. Like, of course, he is not on that big wing level. But I don't think Kawhi is on Kobe and Durant and LeBron's level completely, because there's something there that he has lacked as a leader that those guys come through. He doesn't speak in the same. So that's, I'm not, there are almost two separate points, and we could probably go a long time on that. So let me kick
for
it
sure,
back.
For sure.
I'm just trying to recognize what Chris Paul has done to transform Phoenix, even while acknowledging that Devin Booker's skill set in key playoff games, like, becomes, you know, becomes a little bit more valuable in terms of shot making and all that. And defensively, though, Chris is great on defense. And so that's, again, that's the, he's a counter to the typical 6'1" guy, where like Donovan Mitchell isn't impacting that much. Chris is.
So the point, so all of those are great points, Mike. The thing that I was going to say, Pete, to sort of counter or to add more context to what you were saying, but also as a bit of a counterweight to that idea, is that we also saw how a limited Chris Paul, while playing with Devin Booker, made Devin Booker's job harder. Right? Because because he does have to take on more playmaking responsibility, and he does have the ball more. And Booker at his best is, he is the assassin, right? He is the guy with the knife. He's not the guy who is also laying out the plans. If this was like Ocean 11, right? He would be like, he is the guy who's going in and actually bringing the bags out. Right. He's not the guy who's building out the entire infrastructure of what the plan is going to look like. He is the executor of that plan. And Paul, in his way, is a wonderful player all on his own. Right. But what his particular skill set amplifies a player like Devin Booker, because it allows him to play with more freedom. Right. And so that to me is what makes Mike's argument, like, that's more on Mike's side of the argument, right? It doesn't devalue Booker as the player that he is, because Booker stands alone as what he does for the Suns. There's no other player that can do for the Suns what Booker does. But there's also no other player who does what Chris Paul can do for the Suns, even if they do have reserves, not even Booker, right? Now, Paul, to a certain extent, he can say, hey, if I need to turn it up here a little bit, can I get you 20 points in and a half? He can, right? But if you tell Booker, hey, go out there and run the entire show and organize things and make things right, like, it's not going to quite be there. Right. And so that's why they are so good as a backcourt tandem. Right. So that's why I wouldn't quite put Paul up there as like Kawhi, but it's to me, the margin is more razor thin than it is like, oh, well, there's a big step there. Because I don't think the step is that big in terms of importance to what they do for each of their teams.
It's just, Pete, it's just a big, it's a big intangibles argument, right? Because like the basketball eye test stuff is, you can never actually pick Chris over Kawhi, but there's like part of your being that wants to, you know, in certain settings.
Not part of my being that wants to, but look, losing Chris Paul is a very big deal no matter what. My only point is that it is more survivable for them, especially when whomever they play in the conference finals, they're going to be incomplete or dinged up too. Say Utah wins the series and Conley comes back, he's not going to be anywhere close to what he is. Mitchell's dealing with an ankle. Like, that's the story of this season right now, is everybody, even the teams that are healthy, are really not healthy. And it's a war of attrition that everybody is trying to survive. In that context, I think that CP3 is more survivable than the Clippers, than Kawhi being lost to the Clippers. But in both cases, it's catastrophic, right? If they're lost. So anyway, we gotta wrap this one up. This was a ton of fun. We'll be back tomorrow to talk some Andre Drummond. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. And we'll catch you guys next time.
Ames has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel for the winner. It's on the way. Good!
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed.
a Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two. One. Miss it. Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over. Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yeah. And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.